This is Mental, the podcast to destigmatize mental health. I'm Bobby Temps. Each Thursday, we delve into a factor or condition that influences the mind and how to better manage it. With special guests and stats you can trust, here we go. So this episode, I'm talking to Emmy Parsons about ADHD and more generally her experience with mental health. And we also get into how she's found outlets to overcome these conditions. In this episode, we'll get into talking with Emmy about how ADHD became known to her from quite a young age, but actually took a lot longer for her to get professional help with. We go into how this affects her life then, how it affects her life now, and many of the ways she's found to cope with the condition and other mental health needs of hers. I just wanted to bring in a few stats just to start us off with. But before that, I've got a definition of ADHD from the NHS, and that is attention deficit hyperactivity disorder, otherwise known as ADHD, is a group of behavioral symptoms that include inattentiveness, hyperactivity, and impulsiveness. It's something that is quite common, but is generally more common in males. So I've got some stats for this from healthline.com, one of which is during their lifetimes, 13% of men will be diagnosed with the condition, whereas just 4.2% of women will be diagnosed. And the average age of ADHD diagnosis is 7 years old in the UK. So that's pretty young. When it comes to mental health, for an average age, that is very young. And so that's why it's so important that not only it's understood by parents, but also by schools and institutions, as often they're the ones that pick it up. And they're the ones that maybe, because they're dealing with so many kids, can spot those differences and difficulties the child may be going through early on. In the episode, I was quite keen to get into how these gender differences can influence potentially diagnosis. I wonder, because it's so much less common in females, whether or not that can mean they're less likely to be diagnosed because it's less common, or whether there could also be a factor of it's some way stereotyped onto boys, and so maybe women are less likely to be diagnosed because they think it's less likely, if that makes sense. And that's all of my stats for now. So we'll get into the episode with Emmy in a moment.
This week's Audible recommendation.
One of my all-time favourite writers is Catlin Moran. She is actually from the Greater Birmingham area. She currently works for The Times, and she's a weekend columnist. And she writes really great summaries that are kind of fun, entertaining, looking at news, celebrity culture, society in general. Each week she has a different topic. She's actually compiled loads of them into a book called Moranifesto, a play on her last name, Moran. And that's a really great summary of her forward-thinking views on society in general. And she covers loads of really important topics that are just as up to date today, even though the book was published 2 years ago. So yeah, if you want to try it for free and you're new to using Audible, then you just need to follow our link, bit.ly/mentalbooks. The link and details of the book will be in the description for this episode.
Hi, I'm Emmy. I'm 28 years old. And I'm a spoken word artist and musician from Essex. So I have only recently, at the age of being 28, been diagnosed with psychothymia and showing some very clear evident signs of ADHD, which went massively unnoticed when I was growing up as a child and through my teenage years. Mm-hmm. And it's only recently, in the last couple of years, that I've managed to find a great deal of I suppose, confidence in myself and felt freer to talk about these things, because for a long time, I suppose, I felt very trapped in myself and didn't really know who I was or where I was in my own head. So, mm-hmm. Yeah.
No, I think that's even there is quite a common experience of kids growing up. And we've talked about on the show before how you're not educated when it comes to mental health. So then you can grow up or even from a young age experience these things and not know what's going on, what's happening with your mind.
Very true. And I think that when I remember vividly being about 13, 14 years old and being very aware that my brain maybe worked differently to people around me. And mm-hmm. I think that whilst I knew that there was some differences between me and other people, I didn't know whether there was something wrong with me, whether that was my personality. And it was quite an isolating feeling, not really knowing what that meant, I suppose.
Yeah, for sure. And do you have any specific examples of potentially early ADD or ADHD symptoms?
I think that the biggest thing, and I think this is quite common, especially with girls and women, is that a lot of people quite often link ADHD to being you're hyperactive, you can't sit down, you're badly behaved. And I think that's quite common for people to make that assumption with boys as well, because we know, especially in school and education, if there's a naughty boy and you'd quite often that label of ADHD would be linked to that. But I think that what a lot of people don't understand is that there's like many subtypes of ADHD. And actually what was glowingly obvious from early on that when I noticed was that I was sort of impulsivity, inattentiveness and hyperactivity. Mm-hmm. And my inattentiveness, I suppose, which came across as a bit of carelessness, laziness and clumsiness, were actually signs of me physically being unable to cope. So I would always lose things to the point where I would have it 1 minute in my hand and then I'd lose it. I found it very difficult to organise anything. Mm-hmm. And this is still very much true to this day. I will start a task but never be able to finish it. I have an extreme hyper focus for one area of things, which is performance and music, but absolutely disinterested in most other things. But because I wasn't shouting and screaming and causing chaos all the time, I think that's why it went so unnoticed.
I think that can be true. It reminds me of a parallel with myself, which isn't mental health wise, but with dyslexia, I was my mum first realised I had dyslexia before the school ever did, and that's what you've made me think of, because I wonder if because I wasn't causing any trouble, I just wasn't keeping up, that maybe that's why the school weren't perhaps actively looking for something that might be wrong. They were just kind of keeping me behind at breaks and things to finish my work, and that seemed like enough of a fix. I'm interested to get your perspective as well on, with ADHD, it is more common in boys. And so do you think that affects how or if it's diagnosed in girls?
I do think that, yeah. And I think that quite often girls growing up are very good at sort of masking how they feel. Mm-hmm. And I mean, that of course, that can be the case for boys as well, but I know that that's a big reason why a lot of girls and women don't get diagnosed. And I suppose that if I mean, a lot of us, anyone can be clumsy at times, anyone can be quite lazy at times or a bit careless, and I suppose those things, if they're very subtle, can quite easily go unnoticed. Like you said, when I was at school, I was a bit of like the class clown, and my homework was never in on time. I was always late for things. Mm-hmm. I was on school report, and I was often, you know, not huge punishments, but in detention and things like that. And I think at the time, a lot of that was put down to, because I was a girl, it's down to hormones. And because I was a certain age, when I was going to the doctor, because I used to have these sort of tremendous outbursts of like, feeling really depressed and mm-hmm. quite angry, and I suppose I was angry at how I was feeling, and the doctor repeatedly said at that age, oh, it must be down to our hormones, which now obviously we know maybe it was a bit more than that.
Yeah, and that's quite concerning as well for a doctor to say, because you'd think if anyone is going to be able to put aside influences of someone's age and focus on what the core problem is, you'd hope it would be a doctor.
Yeah, exactly. I do think that ADHD and any sort of mental illness, when a child is, you know, below the age of 16 or even below the age of 18, quite often you don't hear of many children that are getting told that they're, you know, they're suffering with like depression or anxiety or ADHD or any of these things, because they're harder to pinpoint, I think, like for a doctor to say, yeah, that's what that is, especially when you're a child who's managing to mask it quite well.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And I think from a very young age, we build up an understanding of what's considered normal. And so Kids from very early on are actively masking behaviour that seems unnormal. And I think I wonder if maybe from the other side of it, from the parents' perspective, they can easily put it down to hormones or some kind of phase, because maybe part of them wants that to be the answer, that, you know, if it's a phase, it's something that will go away, whereas actually with mental illness, often it can be more permanent.
And I'm very lucky. I've got a very supportive sort of family network and friends and partner. And my mum and dad have always been a really good support to me. But, you know, while I was growing up, I suppose they, for a long time, they probably thought I was a teenager acting out. Mm-hmm. They thought that maybe I was just messing around or got in with the wrong crowd. And then it wasn't until, you know, my time at education had finished and it was past school and college and all of those things, and actually I was in the real world and I was an adult and I was still having these problems, if not worse, because they were more visible because I was an adult. I think that's when it became apparent that, you know, something more needed to happen. I needed to either, you know, talk to someone or go about getting a diagnosis or something like that.
So you also mentioned near the start there about another condition.
Yeah, cyclothymia, which is sort of like a subtype of bipolar disorder, which again is very, very, it's like a milder version. So quite often mild symptoms can go unnoticed. For me, getting that diagnosis recently and being put on medication and being able to talk freely about that was probably one of the most sort of life affirming and comforting things, I think, because that was like the missing part of the puzzle. Suddenly all of these things that I'd been questioning and worrying about in my head for all these years, I was able to go, actually, now that makes sense. Okay, that's why I'm like that.
And did you find at all with having that kind of dual diagnosis that they influenced each other? Did that help clear things up?
I think that over the years as well, especially having, you know, feeling depressed and being quite an anxious person, like depression and anxiety is a quick go-to, like to say, okay, well, like that's what that is. And it's easy to say, okay, well, you're depressed. But actually what I later found out is, you know, these depressive stages and the anxiety and things like that are sort of, they're all under the same umbrella, and actually they were just different parts of what I was going through.
Yeah, no, that's an odd thing about mental health in a way, is that so many of the conditions can be symptoms of other conditions. Like another parallel I've mentioned before is body dysmorphia and eating disorders. Generally, body dysmorphia, although it can be a separate condition, with eating disorders, it's generally a symptom of them when people have both. So it can be really hard to draw the lines of what is its own condition and what is something separate. And I think because with mental health, so many of the symptoms can be the same for multiple conditions, it blurs those lines even further.
And also I think that with what we know, typically from what a lot of people know from bipolar disorder, is, you know, having bouts of feeling really low 1 minute and then being happy the next. Obviously, that is not as black and white as that.
Yes.
But that made me realise, okay, well, that's why I am the way I am, because I'm quite often, I can be the most outgoing, positive person and have a real sort of zest for life and really enjoy spending time with people and doing new things and almost very like positive and hyperactive, but then that can very quickly change to me feeling really low, self-esteem, having a real lack of interest for anything. Mm-hmm. And they normally like change between sort of every few weeks, I would say, on a sort of monthly basis. And it's learning over the years as to when that's going to happen and what my triggers are, I suppose.
Yeah, no, that's really important. Actually, the episode we recorded before this was all about self-care. So it's funny that you should bring that up, because it is so important taking the time to get to know yourself and get to know what the individual symptoms are for you.
Yeah, exactly. And I think that I've found what my niche is and the things that make me happy. And whilst obviously nothing is fixable when I'm in those really low states, I often feel like I can't escape those moments. But the one thing I do think I've always had that is a good outlet for me is being able to write. And whilst I don't have much concentration to read a book or stick to many other hobbies, being mm-hmm. able to write and to express myself in that way has been a real life-saving thing, I think.
Yeah, and that's something that it sounds like you've really made the most of, that in that you teach music now and you also perform yourself. So you found a way to take your difficulty concentrating on most things, but find something that really works for you and make your life around that.
And I suppose what I soon realised was actually, whilst there are many negatives about, you know, suffering with mental health problems and having real bouts of feeling low and then feeling really positive, is that actually it comes with a great deal of passion and my ability to be creative, actually. And I think that that's the one thing that I am sort of grateful for with my brain. Having a brain that works at 100 means that I never run out of ideas and mm-hmm. I never run out of passion for the things that I love. And I think that I'm quite grateful for that in a way.
Yeah, definitely. It's funny, really, because we did obviously some research for the show into the link between mental health and music, or writing or spoken word or whatever it is. And it's relatively limited. It's something that by people dealing with mental health, you know, people outside of science and research like us, it's well acknowledged, whereas actually there's very little study that's gone into why that's so positive. I did find something regarding that, which was a Cochrane review, so like an analysis of various different studies measuring whether music therapy is useful for treating depression. And the reviewers only found 5 studies appropriate for that line of research. However, 4 of them concluded that patients exposed to music therapy had a greater reduction in symptoms. Mm. So the link is clearly there. But it's, I guess, again, that's the importance of knowing yourself and taking the time to understand what works for you, because you're always going to be the expert on you.
Yeah, exactly. And I think that it's been very, very obvious to me that the positive effect it has, not just because of myself and how it's helped me over the years, but also because I teach and I work with children and teach music in schools and as part of a performing arts group. Mm-hmm. I see, like, when I was a child and when I was a teenager, I was so sort of desperate to find something that made me feel like I belonged somewhere, something that gave me a sense of belonging. And the one thing that made me feel like that was music, because whether that was forming bands, that was a good way for me to make friends, because I had a talent and something I could talk about, which otherwise I didn't really felt like I fit in with other girls my age and their interests and the things that they liked. But that was a way of me sort of keeping friends and doing something that I loved. And I think that now I'm an adult and I can pass that on to other people, I think that's a really rewarding thing.
Yeah, no, definitely. And it's so clear just hearing you talk about it, how much passion you have for that.
So it's very much.
Yeah.
I mean, I've been doing that. I always say, because I've got such a hyper focus for music and performance and spoken word, it's almost like I don't know of anything else. And I don't, what I do know, but I'm not very academic in terms of the music theory side of things. I'm far from a genius, but what I do know is that I feel that music is free therapy. I always say that the power of music is incredible. And even from when we're young children, we like just hearing music in everyday life, in shops and on adverts and on TV, and all of us grow up with music, and we've all got that link, I suppose, that one thing that keeps us all together.
Yeah, definitely. It's something that there's very few outlets where it can so transport you. Like, there's songs that I even know from like growing up where I can hear them and it's like I can remember memories that I couldn't remember without it. It just brings so much to the surface.
Yeah, definitely.
It's incredible. And so you've talked a bit about how you first started having a relationship with mental health, how you started understanding that from school and then getting diagnosed. And so where are you at now in terms of your mental health?
I would say I'm in a lot more positive place than I have been. But unfortunately, with all things to do with mental health, it's a constant sort of, I suppose, a battle, because whilst I feel the things that I'm doing now by promoting, like being a real sort of advocate for mental health and talking, being able to talk about it and expressing myself through music and stuff, I feel like that's been a massive help for me. Something that I haven't really felt like I was able to do a few years ago.
Yeah.
So that in itself has made me feel more self-confident and given me more awareness of who I am as a person. And it was a real, I suppose what I've learned the most is mental health can really sort of damage your relationships with people, not just love relationships, but friendships. And you're not always the easiest person to be around. And I think I'm very grateful for the close people I have got around me, the people that do support me, my close family and friends and my partner who understand how my mind works, or at least want to try and understand. And I think I'll always be grateful for that.
Yeah. And that's what's so important about speaking up, really. I understand that not everyone feels comfortable doing that, but I'd really encourage it, because many people go into working in mental health or being a vocal advocate about it, doing things like podcasts. And I think when you do so, you generally go in with the idea of, I want to support others. I don't want them to feel that they're on their own. But then actually what people tend to find is that it's so helpful to them as well, by just sharing your thoughts and your experiences. It can be so transformational for you as well.
Yeah, and I didn't realise quite how much, just through, whether this be like performances, a spoken word, or even I've got sort of like a Facebook artist page where I'd sort of share my thoughts about some of these topics. And it's incredible how often that I'll write something or talk about something, and the amount of messages I get from people saying, oh, actually, that's, made me feel a certain way because I felt like that before and I don't often speak about it. And it really opens your eyes to how many people there are that are feeling the same or are suffering in some way that you didn't know about.
Absolutely. It's so much more universal. And that's something that I have my mixed feelings about social media, but it's something that definitely seems to be a positive, that if you find the right places to look, then there is such a community of people talking about mental health and talking about it in a positive and forward thinking way. So no, it's great that you're experiencing that too as well. I'm interested to know as well, as you've mentioned that, because I've found that having done the podcast, I'm having a lot more conversations in the real world, not just online or through, you know, the internet, the podcast going out to people. More of the people that I already know feel comfortable approaching me. Is that something you've found as well?
Yeah, I have found that. And actually, I've got friends that I've been friends with my entire life who actually, I've never had that conversation of saying, this is the condition I've got, this is what I'm dealing with. But without having to say those words, I can quite often say, do you know what, today I'm feeling this way, mm-hmm. and they will know what I mean by that. And just having that outlet of being able to say that, and actually them, I think as well, they're not judging me and they're feeling like it comes from a non-judgmental place. And yeah, I suppose that people, in by me saying how I feel and expressing how I feel, I think my friends now feel more comfortable to then talk to me about it.
Mm-hmm. That's great to hear. I think it's one of those things where you kind of have to feel it out to really see the power of being someone that people can approach.
Yeah, definitely.
So I'm interested to know then, in terms of where you're at now, how ADHD in particular affects your life. And do you have any kind of top tips for managing it that you find helpful?
I would say that I was so unsure as to whether I wanted sort of an ADHD diagnosis or whether I wanted to go and carry on the way I was. Mm-hmm. And I soon found out that actually, with or without a diagnosis, whatever the label is, it was about me taking control and saying, okay, this is what I need help with, this is what I need to get better at, and this is what I need to put in place for me to be able to do that. And I think for a long time I put that off because I was scared, B, because I didn't know how, and I was worried that I was going to have to talk about it more. But some big changes that I made that are just such simple tasks for maybe people who don't suffer with it, but have made a difference to my life is time management and timetabling my day and organising what I need to do. I'm still terrible at it sometimes, even with mm-hmm. taking medication. I could often forget, and I have different alarms for things, and even really basic things like remembering, you know, the keys, wallet, the stuff I need for work. I'm a guitar teacher, and I've been known quite often to leave without my guitar. So it's finding a way of writing down the things I need to do and doing to-do lists and things like that. And I take each day at a time now and say, you know what, today I'm going to do this. And once mm-hmm. I've done that and I've achieved that, then I can move on to the next thing.
Yeah, that sounds really great, because it's just it could seem almost like an obvious example to people, but you need to take action on the areas where you can fall down, whatever you're going through, in order to get better at managing that. So you may never be good at remembering, you know, your guitar, but if you put a notification on your phone, the technology's there.
Yeah, exactly. And I'm sure that, you know, I'm sure it drives my family crazy. I know it drives my partner crazy, because I will quite often be like, oh, set an alarm for something and then pause mm-hmm. the alarm and then forget that I've even set the alarm. So it all becomes a bit counterproductive. But I think another thing that I found that is key, I think, and really important for my sort of mental health and self-care and feeling better about myself, is whilst there are lots of things that I'm not good at, is focusing on the things that I am good at and putting all of my energy into that. Mm-hmm. So because my brain is constant, this is the way I describe it, and actually one of my spoken word pieces is called volume control, and I quite often talk about this. When I was going to the doctors and I was explaining what it felt like in my head, I was saying it feels like my mind is like a volume control button, and it is stuck on 100, and no matter mm-hmm. what I do, it doesn't turn down, even when I want to go to sleep or when yeah. I want to relax. And I used to find that really impossible to sort of regulate myself, and it would become really overwhelming. Sometimes I would not want to speak to people because I'd say the information was too much for me to retain because I already had too much in my head. Mm-hmm. But what I soon realized was keeping busy all the time
and using that mental energy to put into the things I love doing actually is really productive.
Yeah, absolutely, because you're finding ways around the situation to try and turn it into a positive.
Yeah, exactly.
The person that comes to mind for me when I think of those with ADHD is will.i.am. I'll probably find a quote of his for Instagram after this episode goes out. But he's a great example of, like, he's in many ways kind of what people might think of as a stereotype for that condition, in that he seems very hyperactive and he's always doing so many things at once and rushing around. But he's found a way to channel that so that there are other people that, you know, manage other parts of his life, and he just focuses on as many projects as he can, being super productive music wise.
Yeah, and I think that's I didn't realise that link for a long time, but sometimes I work 6 days a week and have done for the past sort of 8 or 9 years.
Mm-hmm.
And I would quite often come home after a day at work, because obviously working in a school I'd finish quite early.
Mm-hmm.
And I'd come home after work, and the first couple of hours I'd enjoy being by myself and having that time to sort of, you know, try and get things done. And then after a couple of hours, I could feel like a low mood setting in, and I never really pieced together what that was. And then I would sort of just be lying in my room feeling really low and, oh, I don't want to talk to anyone. And I realised it's because I was almost going a bit stir crazy, because I wasn't mm-hmm. using up the energy I had to put to good use. Whereas now I sort of in a band, so I'll do band practice, I'll gig once a week, I'll go and see my partner, I'll go and spend time with my friends, I'll take on extra guitar lessons, and I do these things to make sure that I very rarely let myself get to a point where I feel low, I suppose. Mm-hmm. I think that's been a real eye opener for me.
Yeah, and I would imagine doing that, channeling it into work, would really help with your self-image as well, because if you're sitting around not doing anything and you still have all the noise inside your head, it's easier to be more self-critical than if you're out there being productive.
Yeah, exactly. And I think that because I have, you know, really low self-esteem, sitting alone with your own thoughts is sometimes the worst thing for that, because without putting your mind to good use, you're often overthinking a situation which could be essentially not much at all.
Mm-hmm. Okay, and so we're coming near the end of our time, so could you talk us through a little bit more about what you do and where people can find your work, really?
Currently I'm sort of working all the time and gigging as much as possible, gigging as a spoken word artist, a musician, and gigging in and around London and Essex, doing sort of poetry slam competitions and open mic sessions and workshops and things like that.
Mm-hmm.
And all of my poems and work are loosely based around the idea of mental health or talking about mental health issues. And yeah, you can find my stuff on Facebook, which is simply ME, which is just EMY in capital letters with a full stop after it.
Mm-hmm.
Or you can find me on Instagram, which is MEP with an underscore. And Twitter is the same as well, MEP. Yeah, so that's where all of my sort of poetry and spoken word stuff is. But I'm sort of, I get about a lot. Mm-hmm.
And I'm assuming you put up on social media when your dates are that you're performing as well.
Yes, I always do, yeah. So I gig quite often in Essex as well, in Southend, which is where I'm from. But, when any sort of London gig dates or anything that people can come to, I always post on my Facebook page. So it's just MEEMY, full stop.
Brilliant. Thank you. Okay, so that's coming up to our time. So thank you so much for taking the time to talk to us today.
Thank you very much. It's been great.
So two more things just before we finish up. One is a quote I really like from Robert Gupta during a TED talk he did about the link between mental health and music. He said, "Music is medicine. Music changes us because music allows us to take thoughts and delusions and shape them through imagination. And the second thing is we're going to have Emmy play us out with the performance she did recently.
Imagine, if you will, volume control. You know, the twisty knob on a stereo or a car radio. Now imagine it's at 100 and it keeps spinning round, and no matter how much you want it to, it won't turn down. Now imagine that cacophony in the caverns of your head, and it's only getting louder when I try and go to bed. It's every wire of my brain being caught on a sound. It's the lights, it's the chaos of a merry-go-round. Cause I'm tuned into higher things, distracted by higher things. I grow wings, my soul sings, distracted by higher things. The adrenaline of waiting for a beat to drop, it makes me sick to my stomach, but I don't want it to stop. Adderall and Ritalin, Metadate and Folicin, Citralopram, Diazepam, Prozac and Quetiapine. I'm thankful for the relief, though it's brief, but then I miss me. I miss the me I used to be. I ain't broke, so don't fix me. 28 years for them to give me a label. Took 28 years for them to call me unstable. But just because you want to give something a name, essentially it's irrelevant. I'm exactly the same as I was before your pills and all the heartbreak and the pain. Before every single memory made a home in my brain. Underneath all this bedlam is a heart of gold. So is it my fault my brain don't want to do what it's told? Imitation is flattery, and flattery is good. They want me to bite back, and hell, maybe I should. People tear me apart for everything that I am, but then you're clicking on my videos to beat you a fan. I wasn't brave enough before to do it on my Jack Jones. I wasn't brave enough to sit in my glass house throwing big stones. But the pain and the hunger's deep rooted, growing flowers in my chest bones. I'm growing flowers in my chest bones. And I want to change the world, and I'm mad enough to think I could. I lost my mind 1,000 times, screwed up enough to know I would. Should I shut my mouth? Don't ever think I fucking should. My words, they give me purpose, like being loved or motherhood. Cause I could blame it on anxiety, or I could blame it on my ADD. But the hyper-focus and creativity, you can't take that away from me. And I could blame it on society, but I know my brain is down to me. My hyper-focus and creativity will take me places that you'll never reach, and you can't take that away from me.
And now, an account for a healthier online world. This time I'm recommending the Mental Health Foundation. They're a UK charity working towards good mental health for all. And they're really active on social media, not only with sharing insight and people's stories of living with mental health, which is great, but also they're behind Mental Health Awareness Week. So definitely have a look at them and what they do. They run loads of great initiatives, like they have green pins, like you may know, like breast cancer awareness pins are pink. They have a green equivalent. They have great ways to raise awareness like that, by all you need to do is wear a pin. So you can find the Mental Health Foundation by searching for Mental Health Foundation on all social media. Thank you for listening. For a list of our recommended resources, visit mentalpodcast.co.uk. And remember, we are in no way a substitute for qualified counselling or other mental health support. Our show is edited and produced by the brilliant Pete Murta, with licensed music by NetSky. Links in the description. Speak to you next Thursday, and remember, you are enough.